We have a dream.
We have a voice.
This is
The Anchor Nation.
The Anchor Nation.
The Anchor Nation.
The Anchor Nation.
Hi, I am your host, Kevin Touch, and we are
The Anchor Nation.
Hello, Anchor Nation. This is Kevin Touch, the host of Anchor Nation Community Radio, and we're back with another episode of the Anchor Nation Podcast, episode 96 with Lauren Bernstein. Had a great conversation with Lauren about video marketing, creation, digital marketing, and augmented reality, and some plans if you had a bigger budget to blow the market space up. Hope you guys enjoy.
Hello, Anchor Nation. This is Kevin Touch, the host of Anchor Nation Community Radio, and we're back with another episode of the Anchor Nation Podcast, episode 96 with Lauren. Now, without further ado, introduce himself.
Hi, what's going on? My name is Lauren Bronstein. I'm, I guess we could say, digital marketing, I guess, aficionado. I do that by craft, I guess. People give me money and I advertise on their behalf and raise awareness for them. And as a result, they generally get an increase in business. It's something I pride myself in because I feel it's a challenge every time. And people don't really, I feel the way people reflect advertising is that often it's hard selling a product, sort of like a sleazy salesman. Mm-hmm. But I feel it doesn't have to be that way because, you know, all products have a story. Everything has an origin story, and people care about story. People resonate with emotion. And if you tie your product to whatever emotion it's closely related to, if you just think about whatever really the product manifests itself into, people resonate with that. So what I'm saying is, like, people think of cars, I guess, as a status symbol. But in reality, cars are very closely tied to emotions. Right. And marketing experts know that, and that's how they get cars to sell, and that's how they get, you know, people to resonate with cars. So I guess in short, I like connecting people with their emotions through products.
Awesome. And we're going to definitely learn a bit more about advertising and just the emotional side we get further into the interview. But for question one is, how did you discover Anchor?
So being marketing,
right,
you know, expert by trade, I view the app store pretty frequently, almost every day, and I see things that are trending or new apps, and Anchor was one of them. So I download a lot of stuff just to test it out, because I don't know what's going to be a hit or what's not. So when I first got Anchor, I thought, I always knew podcasting was going to be very big, because podcasting, it's something you can do when you're commuting. A lot of people spend a lot of their life commuting to work, from work, you know, on the subway, a lot of time without internet connection. And podcasting is something you can download to your phone. It's something you can listen to when you're sort of indisposed or sort of preoccupied. So that's why I've always felt podcasting will be a big medium. So, you know, Anchor just makes the accessibility to podcasting that much easier for anybody to do. So that's, I found it, you know, through the App Store, and I kept it and kept trying to learn about it and record myself, listen to other people, because I feel that it's going to be, it's already big, but I feel it's going to be bigger. People are still sleeping on it today.
Right. In the way audio is moving, where everyone is on the go and has not as much time to look at a video on a screen, just plug some earphones and you're good. So I think definitely trying apps like podcasting and Anchor and give you that leverage for sure.
Absolutely.
And for question two, what is your message you put out on the other social media platforms?
So, to reiterate the convoluted thing I said previously, I believe advertising is done poorly in most cases because people are hard selling. They're like a sleazy car salesman that's focused on just getting the highest sales mm-hmm. that month. People, they're less focused on the long-term goals of building a relationship with your customers. And that can be done by providing value to them long-term. And it may not be in this case, it may not be in the sense of an immediate sale. Sometimes it may just be providing information. Sometimes it may be giving away like a freebie or sample today, because down the line they may come back and be a lifelong customer and recommend their friends. And I try to promote that message that, you know, when you're trying to grow your business, or you're trying to grow your business even bigger, let's say you're successful, you want to grow even bigger, a way to do that is to stop focusing so much on the day-to-day sales and try to focus on the bigger picture of building long-term relationships and building people that will become your cheerleaders. Because if you can build relationships with customers that are so adamant on your brand, they're so excited about your brand because your brand lifts them to such levels that they wouldn't be at without you, they will promote you on, you know, just because they love you that much. Like, look at Mac users, mm-hmm. Nike users, Jordan users. They're so passionate about the brand because the brand, by wearing, you know, the Jordans, for example, they feel more confident. And it's, you know, it's a partnership rather than just selling them something, and that's important, and I feel not enough people acknowledge that.
No, I hear you. You have to build and sustain the partnership. Now, just real quick, Fob, would you say, is there anything in particular you notice with your career at this that develops with relationships? Do you feel it's stable in the beginning, or is you still have to gain that confidence and credibility before you can attack the advertising game?
Sorry, may I ask you that one more time?
You know, just to clarify. What would you say, like, when you first got into it, what would you say was the experience like with trying to gain credibility with your brand or any other brand?
So I would say, you know, off the bat, like, nobody has credibility until you prove credibility. But to tell someone, like, I'm just starting out, like, that doesn't mean anything. They're not going to be like, well, because you're starting out, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. It doesn't matter. People don't care about that, truth be told. So whether you're starting out today or whether you've already been an established brand and people still don't know who you are, despite you already being in business and struggling for many years, maybe you're barely scraping by, and regardless of what it is, whether you started today or started a long time ago and you want more attention, just today, just start providing value. And you say, well, what's value? People say that, but what actually is value? Well, it's different for everybody, but whatever your specific business is, try to do a little bit of research about the people that would buy from you or buy from your competitors. If you don't know who would buy from you, who's your competitor? See who would buy from your competitors. See what engages them to make a purchase. Is it a problem that arises, or is it something that they buy to prevent a problem from arising, like a smoke detector or smoke alarm you buy to prevent something? So you buy before the problem occurs. Is that the kind of business you're in? Or are you in the business where after something wrong happens, you buy so that it doesn't happen again? You know, stain remover or something like that. Like, you have to understand what kind of business you're in first and what the business model is, because if you can understand the psychology behind why people buy your product or what motivates a purchase of your product or your service, it'll be easier to provide value to those people. And I don't just mean by saying, buy my services, we're great at what we do, but you can provide value to them by writing free blog posts or, you know, providing short snippets of information on Instagram or Twitter of things that are somewhat related to your brand or service that they can do at home. Like, if you're a stain remover company and you get really tough stains out of carpets or stuff, maybe you can just share a few tips for getting stains out with home remedies, things like that. People don't forget stuff like that. It's being human, and it's making a connection with
people. Right, it's the small things that matter in the grand scheme of things to build your credibility, for sure.
Right, and whether you're a new company, or whether you're an established company, you know, like, that builds credibility. Like, truth is truth, and, you know, and just because someone else is saying it doesn't mean you can't say it as well, unless it's something that's, you know, patented, as if they've taken. You know, information generally is just information. Many people can repeat the same information. Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, and you have to look at it in the sense that whether it's small or big, the information you put in is what you get out. So whatever information you put in and get out, it could really show at the end of the day. So it's important to keep that in mind, for sure.
Absolutely. One last thing is, like, information is, like, I always say it's like planting the seeds of information, in the sense that when you're putting information out there on the internet or into the world, you may not see instant gratification, right, but by planting the seeds of information, people may stumble upon it a couple of months from now, and that's, you know, how your site generates traffic over time. You have to think how people think. You know, maybe a problem doesn't occur today, but when they Google it, you know, you read an article 3 months ago, that article may pop up 3 months down the line because someone Googled a question that, you know, your keywords came up.
Mm-hmm. And that's the information. It can be taken with a grain of salt, or it can be taken with actual passion, and how you plant that seed of information onto the customer, client, or whatever the case may be. That's a little bit about how you are as a person too. So it's important to keep that in mind, as you said.
Yes.
And for question three, now we're going to shift a little bit to the video side. What's the backstory how you got involved with video creation?
So my dad actually created infomercials by trade.
Nice.
Since I was very young. Yeah. So I've always had an interest in, I guess you could say, like, the production side of things, pre-production, post-production, editing, writing scripts, things like that. So because I've always sort of been in that world, I've always taken an interest to it. So even at a young age, I've sort of been involved in it. So as I was older, I began to just play around with making videos for fun. As YouTube came out, I just started posting videos just to practice, mostly. So as I started developing a career in advertising, I saw the it was a natural transition because, you know, as videos are quite popular on social media, phones and Instagram, right, and YouTube, I was able to adapt my skills that I've learned just by practicing and having fun by making, you know, videos about skateboarding or World of Warcraft. I was able to use those skills, and they were transferable to making videos for advertising because, you know, storytelling is still storytelling. And, you know, while you would have to implement maybe the marketing techniques in order to have a direction in regards to the script, you would have to write the script a certain way to say a certain thing or sell a certain product. The overall understanding of lighting, editing, you know, storyboards, it was there from just my upbringing, just because I was just lucky enough to have a dad in the industry.
Yeah, that's important. I think, and that's a common theme, is if you have a family member who goes into video creation, or you look at it, especially in the time when YouTube started to come around, 05, 06, that's when you start attacking it because it's fresh and new, and you have the experience. And would you say experience has helped too as you grow with technology? What's your experience level in the past couple of years when you start with video creation from the beginning to now?
I was quite terrible, mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you. But, I mean, anybody is with anything. The problem is people often compare themselves to the current state of whatever they're watching. So if someone sees like a athlete that they wish to replicate, right, like Kobe Bryant or something, they'll look at Kobe Bryant in his prime and be like, well, I'll never be that good. But you're not comparing yourself to when Kobe Bryant first decided he wanted to be a professional basketball player, like you are right now. Like, if you were to compare yourself to that Kobe Bryant, you'd probably be maybe a little bit closer than you would be to the professional Kobe Bryant. Like, we compare ourselves to another example. When I first started my podcast, I would get a little bit discouraged just because I would read on Reddit the comments, or I would compare just, and this was stupid, this was silly of me, to the views of the Joe Rogan Experience, the Tim Ferriss Experience. And you forget that when you watch the very first episode of the Joe Rogan Experience, the quality was garbage. It was a poor camera. It was poor audio that was crackling. So you need to remember that if you're going to compare yourself to whoever you're comparing yourself to, make sure it's a fair comparison, because to compare my first episode to his 10,000th episode, it would be silly. Like, that's, you know, he has so much more experience under his belt, technology and money at this point. So I would have to compare my first episode to his first episode. Anything else would be unfair. So in regards to starting, if you want to compare yourself to see where you are, if you're slacking behind or you are on the right track to improving on quality, compare yourself to wherever the individual first started and see how you compare to
that. Yeah, always try to set the benchmark lower, in a sense that you go from the first of the top people of their first episode. And it's better to compare lower and over-deliver in the end, because if you start thinking to yourself, well, I'm going to be episode one, episode 500, let's say, of Joe's or Tim's, you know, podcast, the chances are it won't be there, and the quality's not going to be there, and you'll get discouraged because there's things that could go wrong with it. Whereas if you go lower, you'll gain experience, and then you get to that 50th, 500th episode in your show, then you can start really moving the benchmark. But for now, it's important to start well, for sure, like you said.
100% on the money.
And for question four, where do you see video creation taking off in the future? I know technology has evolved and different platforms like IGTV have come up, but where do you really see video creation in the future?
So I'm shocked not more people are talking about this, but like augmented reality is going to be like, screw virtual reality. Augmented reality is where it's at. Because like, okay, let's look at IKEA, for example. You buy a new home, you know, you just get married, you buy a new home, you can open your iPad, you download the IKEA app, all of a sudden you are looking through the viewfinder of your iPhone or your iPad, and you're able to pick out your furniture before you even buy it, you know, with the augmented reality IKEA app. That's one example. You know, another one is you could see what the car would look like in your driveway, maybe. Like, there's so many applications for augmented reality. And because it doesn't take you out of reality, like virtual reality does, I feel it's going to be huge. We think it's very, you know, fun. It's like just a thing for kids and nerds to play with. But that's not the case. It's not just for Pokemon Go. There's a lot of real applications. Like, even in the industrial place, in regards to, like, contractors or construction, augmented reality is going to be something that too many people are not acknowledging. It's going to be huge.
I got you. And now we'll kind of rephrase the question. What are some things that you see in 2018 with AR, augmented reality, that you think will develop in, let's say, like 2020? Anything in particular you'll see that's going to move that market space, or is it just more wait and see as we go every day?
With augmented reality, well, I definitely think that I have a feeling that movie experiences may start developing AR. Like, they're already experiencing with 3D, and I don't know exactly how we're going to get there.
Gotcha.
But I've been to Disney World where they've had similar to AR experiences where I don't know if they've been on a ride where the chairs move as you're watching the screen.
No, I have not.
So it's like that, except it was one step further where there were ventilation on the chair and it would simulate, the ride was essentially that an alien escaped and you're on a spaceship, but the ride simulated that the alien was like breathing on your neck and, you could feel like saliva dripping from the ceiling. And it was weird how they did it, but it was just pipes and, holes in the back of the chair to have air vents. But the purpose of it is it created the augmented reality kind of mentality where you felt like you were in another reality despite, being conscious, not having something that changes your vision like virtual reality does. So the most immediate applications I would imagine for augmented reality besides IKEA and besides like industrial stuff like that would be probably recreational things like movies or rides at like amusement parks. That would be the first application just because they have the money to throw at it to learn about research and development. I think augmented reality is still so new. A lot of startups, apps don't necessarily have the money to throw into the research of how can we make this work and how can we make it something that people will use every day.
I hear you. And that is interesting that you said that with the amusement parks because you have these virtual games like you have like Roller Coaster Tycoon, Planet Coaster, those types of games. And video gaming could be definitely, I'm sure, like you said, Pokemon Go, it could expand more into esports and stuff like that. So definitely, I think with the fact that it is a new industry, the more chances you take with AR, the more you'll start to see a progression rather than kind of focusing on VR, which is in there. Of course, it's here. But AR definitely moving towards the future for sure.
That's cool.
And for the next question, you're a little bit of a philosopher. What is one thing you take away from philosophy every day and apply to everyday life?
So I really like this question because this is something that I probably annoy everybody around me with, but it's Stoicism, and Stoic philosophy is so important because I tell myself this 100 times a day, and I'm not exaggerating it, probably more than 100 times, literally. I mean, the definition of the word literal, and that's I can't change how anybody else reacts to anything. Ultimately, I can try my best to put things into place to ensure that your reaction is the most ideal reaction I would hope for. But ultimately, I can't control how you react. All I can control is how I react. And that's the philosophy that I have in life, and especially in business. I always try my best to ensure that the client's demands aren't just met, but I over-exceed their expectations. But sometimes, it's not always the case. Sometimes you have to be realistic, and either there's a miscommunication or they just have unrealistic expectations. But ultimately, all I can control is how I react to the situation, not how they react. Often, it sounds like a not fatalistic, but it sounds like it's somewhat of a fatalistic mindset. But in reality, the reasoning for this is if I worry about how they react, I won't do as well if I need to recover the situation. If there's a problem and I need to do some damage recovery, if I'm freaking out over the reaction, I'll have cortisol in my brain. I won't be thinking straight. I'll be fuzzy. I'll be flustered. I won't be able to solve the problem as logically as I would if I just focus on handling my reaction in a way that would try to buffer the situation, however it went.
Interesting. And would you say, just a real quick follow, would you say your more stoic nature and how you handle situations with your everyday job, or is this overall in life you try to be more stoic around other people? What would you say about that?
I'll say that I'm crazy. I've lived most of my life with pretty severe anxiety. So this isn't just me out of the womb. Yeah, like stoic. So this is a lot of hard work. And this is me regurgitating a lot of, I read a lot of Freud, a lot of Jung. I read a lot of books on just self-help and psychology, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And after all, reading all this information, it's sort of this amalgamation I've come to, which is Stoicism. And that, so I would say, I guess to answer your question, it's a little bit of both. It started off as in business, and I'm sort of trying to force to apply it to life because when I'm in business, I'm very level-headed because when I'm dealing with people's money, like that's the most important thing. And I my emotions are completely removed from the equation, which is amazing because when you suffer from anxiety, it's hard to do. But when I feel responsible for someone else, when someone's given me money to do, you know, work for them, that's the most important thing. And it's, for whatever reason, I snuff out the anxiety when I'm working. But in life, sometimes it rears its ugly head. But using the stoic mindset, I try to overcome it.
Interesting. You know, I like that because I think with the stoicism, you have to look at it in a way where you're trying to stay level-headed, but sometimes with an outside factor or element gets in the way and you have to put the pressure on. It's crazy how you have to react to one situation when being stoic and crazy compared to just trying to calm down the business. That is an interesting side. And just last point here, what was a little backstory on the anxiety, and what would you say to anyone who's suffering from anxiety and how to get over it from day to day?
So something it took me a long time to acknowledge, and I'll say, like, I'm 28. My birthday was like last week, so it took me like 27 years to realize this. I'll say, like, up to last year when it finally hit me. And that's, everybody's chasing the cure for, like, happiness. How to be happy? I want to be happy. As if happiness is a destination you reach. And people say this all the time, but I don't think people acknowledge it enough. And I go on about mindfulness because being in the moment, when you're in the, often you think you're sad, but when you're sad, it's often because you're in your head. When you're actually self-aware and actually in the moment, most people I know, and I'm talking about people that suffer with very severe chronic depression, when they are in the moment, you know, it takes time to learn how to develop, you know, being in the moment, but the more you meditate, the more you practice self-awareness. When you finally realize when you're in the moment, you realize the moment isn't as painful as the being in your head is. And the pain from depression, the suffering from anxiety, it often manifests itself when you're primarily in your head. So if you can try to force yourself to stay in the moment, the present moment, whether that's talking to someone in this conversation we're having now, or playing a game or gardening or whatever you're doing,
right,
the more you can focus on the actions, the actual physical actions, the more you'll see the pain sort of subsides because the pain is more just you cycling through the same thoughts over and over again.
Interesting. You said that in the sense that the pain and all that suffering is all over the same thoughts because I don't have any experience, but in a sense where you have to look at it in a sense where I think what I'm trying to get at here is you have your thoughts, you know, it's in the back of your mind that anxious moments happen every single day. Of course, it's just everyday life stresses and how you handle it. Really, it depends on your conscience sometimes and how you get mentally prepared. Would you say it's more of a mental battle sometimes and more of a physical battle each day with the anxiety?
It very much is. It's, you know, a lot of it is handling. Like, I feel like you have two minds inside your one brain. It's like the lizard brain and the human brain.
Gotcha.
And you gotta tackle that lizard brain. And the lizard brain can be snuffed out by physical exertion, by exercising. You can sort of snuff out a little bit of the what seems like emotion that takes control. But emotion is like a roller coaster. You know, it's fun to ride, but the more you ride, it eventually gets sick.
Right.
So you gotta get off at some time.
Yeah, there's always gonna be a balance and cutoff point for sure.
Right. People with anxiety they often ride that roller coaster for decades. And that's why they're so sick because, like, of course you'd be sick. That's not, there's no balance there, like you said.
And too much of anything is no good. So it's important just to find the right levels of exertion between exercise and knowing the situation at hand and that task. And that's a good transition, actually, into just knowing the situation of technology for question six. How has this technology played a role in digital marketing the last 6 years with Instagram, with social media in general, with the actual products and services?
I would say the biggest thing in regards to the change of technology in the past 6 years is people having to be, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, people have to, they're called out on their stuff now. You can't say anything and get away with it. You can't just lie. Like, people fact check everything now.
Right. The
and
fake
that's
news.
More so than ever. Yeah, the fake news. Like, so people say things and you can't make a false claim without getting, you know, caught. That's tremendously changed. So you have to be accountable. That's what I was looking for, accountability. You have to be accountable for everything you say. Because if you're not, people will find out.
And would you, and this, that's a good point, and would you say with the fact that fake news and accountability has really sprung up more, do you think the same thing applies for companies too? I know we've had a lot of recent data breaches. And what do you see the status of the companies moving forward with technology in the past 6 years and how data has been handled?
I think there's a misunderstanding. I think that the companies understand and they have good intentions with using people's data. And I think the people that they also have good intentions with why they don't want their data to be taken by companies, but they don't understand the actual reasoning behind why the companies want it. And it's only to benefit the individual whose data they're taking, because what these people, as upset people as people are for having their data taken by Facebook or Instagram or Amazon, they still like when they're browsing something and then, you know, on the right hand side it says, hey, you can buy this item for really cheap right now and get it delivered to you tomorrow. They still like that, but they don't realize that's often a result of having your data used by these organizations. So it's just, I mean, you know, I just think that people, it's not that people are, it's not that the companies are evil. It's not that people are wrong. I just think people are somewhat misinformed about what the data is being used for. And I think if they knew to the full extent of what the intention of taking our data was for, they'd be more okay with it. You know, we don't know, people don't know these, the Amazon doesn't know who you are individually. Right. They don't care enough, truthfully. They just don't care, truthfully. There's too many people.
Right, right.
That's all. I just think that, you know, they're not as nefarious as people make it seem.
I think that's a good point in a sense where we give these companies so much pressure. You know, it's like we they're already providing an incredible service, an incredible amount of leverage and value for us. And the fact that there are these reports and all these things that get out to the media and the media expands on it, makes it a bigger storyline. It just doesn't seem fair. And, I see what you're saying for sure. And
yep.
There you go.
It's okay, I got it.
Oh, good. No worries. That was a good transition to our next point here. Is questions then? How has your family supported you through the journey?
So my dad, being in the industry, he always helped me in regards to anything I had in regards to technical related issues, whether it was writing scripts or anything related to lighting or editing. He himself didn't necessarily know it, but he always associated with people that were lighting guys or editors or camera guys. So if I ever had questions about technology or lingo or anything of the sorts, I always had resources that were close to me. So that's nothing but just dumb luck. I was just lucky enough that my dad was in the industry. So I was just lucky in that sense, I guess.
Kind of, yeah, that's all right, though, in the sense of the luck of the draw. You still leverage that with the Absolutely. Industry and try to gain experience and not just take that for a grain of salt and say, well, my dad's in the industry. I can kind of ride the coattails. You just learn and grow and hone your craft, for sure.
Right. Yeah, I think it's important to still pave your own way. You know, everybody has their own story to tell.
Yes, and that's it. And how you pave the way to the story and whatever the path you go, that's really the ultimate decisions, for sure.
Yeah.
And for the next question is, what is one piece of advice you would give to any creators out there, whether it be just starting out or any age?
A lot of people say this, but I honestly mean it. And it's people say just start. And like, why do you say just start? Because the majority of people that you're looking up to that you think are more talented than you are not more talented than you. They're just more determined than you. That's all it is. And it seems like so cliche to say this, but it's the truth. And we look up to so many people, like Eddie Van Halen, just one example I know of. I don't like Van Halen per se, but you have to admit that he's an excellent guitar player. And what I've learned is, there wasn't a moment where there wasn't a guitar on his back. He would supposedly walk around the house in his, even when he was in his underwear, there was still a guitar around his back, meaning he was always practicing. Even when he wasn't working, when he was in his underwear, he was still practicing. There was never a moment where he wasn't practicing. So to look at these people that are, you know, rock stars, celebrities, pro athletes, and to say like, oh man, it's lucky. It must be lucky to have that kind of build or that kind of mentality. It's like never giving up. A lot of athletes came from horrible, worse conditions than you're currently living in, no matter how bad your conditions are. Most right. pro athletes came from terrible, terrible beginnings, but it's that mentality. It's that, you know, I don't know if anyone listening to this knows who Joey Diaz is, but he's a comedian. And he says that, he jokes, but it's the truth. He says, you know, some people have what's called the immigrant mentality. And that's people that are often immigrants come from poorer countries or harsher conditions. And when they have an opportunity to come to America and have the opportunity to try something like boxing or fighting, and it may give them the opportunity to go out, their mentality, because of what they came from, so much stronger. Their burning desire to achieve it is so much harder than us who come from the Western world, just because they don't want to go back to that.
Right.
So I feel like that's a big portion of what makes success, in my opinion.
Right, and where you, and it's all about that nature versus nurture and where you came from. I think that's a good point because a lot of people, especially today, in today's world, is you look at the other side of the world, if you ever do get a chance to travel, for those of you who are fortunate, you look at just the way they've been living in some of the areas that they have to just, you know, cope with. And when you come here, it's such a different mentality. You don't want to go back. You want to build and sustain credibility and build a foundation here in more of the free countries rather than go back home where you know the risk is high and you don't know what could be lying ahead every day, for sure.
100%. If you have a roof over your head, clean drinking water, and a running toilet, like you're doing better than like 98% of the world.
And that's a staggering, you know, statistic, because you would think with all the resources we have, not everyone can get the actual resources because of some areas are too poor or natural disaster taken out or governmental issues. And it's important just to keep that in mind to be grateful and blessed for the opportunities we do have, especially in North America, for sure.
For sure. We're very lucky. So just practice, like just to summarize, just practice. Doesn't matter what it is, what you want to do. Just the more you try, promise. If you check week to week, how did you do the week before? I guarantee you'll see progress every week.
Exactly. And that's all about the honing, you know, honing that craft, practice your skills, and that mindset will become easier in the sense that you've done it so many times and it's like repetition. It's great.
Becomes second nature.
Exactly. And for question 9 is, who is one person you would want to meet in the video space or create videos either way?
That's a tough one. Well, I mean, he's sort of different. He's sort of an oddball, but Jordan Peterson, if you know who that is.
No, I do know. A little backstory would be good.
Jordan Peterson is he's actually from Toronto. He's a famous, I think he's a psychologist by trade. He makes videos just talking about psychology. He covers morals, ethics, things like that. He's been on many of the famous podcasters many times, and he does lectures, but he records all of his lectures. And he said people, you know, some people like him, some people dislike him because of the things he says may be controversial, but I find him interesting. And I like that he is someone from like a generation back. This, you know, he didn't start in the YouTube generation, but he's part of it because he sort of stumbled into it. He started publishing the videos just because he said, if I'm going to do these lectures anyways, I'll just start recording them and maybe someone online will care. And it turned out a lot of people online actually cared. And it's snowballing still to the point where he's getting even more notoriety from people, and a lot of people are actually turning to him as guidance because he's very well educated and he's willing to share this information that a lot of people would have to go to university to learn. So for him to do it for free and to share it online, I think it's a really cool guy. And for someone of his age, I believe he's in his I'm gonna guess 50s or 60s, I'm just guessing, for him to see the value in YouTube at that age when most people his age don't, that's, you know, it speaks to his character.
Not only that, but it speaks to the fact that age really doesn't matter. I think because if you look at people who are using technology at age 80, 90, you hear these stories, it's like they still have the innovation and the heart to learn, because that's what really one thing age, I feel, doesn't matter on is learning. There, you can be any age from literally the first born to the last breath you take. You're still learning and you're still having that student of the game mentality, especially with a space like technology where some of the older crowd just don't like it or they don't feel it's necessary. And to take those steps, like you said with Peterson, it gives you hope for the future generations, for sure.
Yeah, well, you know, we're creatures of habit and we get used to what we get used to. And, you know, so for a generation to be so used to, like, technology for so long and for new technology to come out, they have to learn. I mean, if you want to learn it, that's great. You'll be ahead of most. But I see why they're stubborn.
Right. And I think the fact that we have to use and learn and apply all these things with technology, the stubbornness comes out. It's because it might be multitasking, it might be too much complexity, but in fact, if you really look at it, just try your best, and if it doesn't work out, it's okay, and if it is, it's great. So it's important just to keep leverage within the technology space and just the video space, for sure.
Well said.
And our last two here is, what is your goals in the next 5 years, maybe personally, your continued work, Anchor, or just anything you want to share with the Anchor Nation?
So I guess in the next 5 years, I would love, if I could break 1,000 listeners on the podcast, that would be really cool. I'm only at around 300 right now, but I'm grateful because more than one person giving me attention is more than one person that I deserve. So to have 300 people is astounding. But if I could break 1,000 in 5 years, I would be to the moon and back.
Wow.
Yeah. And if I would just like to really create something amazing, I've created a lot of, for the clients thus far, I've created work, but I want someone with a big enough budget, not even to pay me, just a big enough budget that we can really spend a little bit of money on some creative, something that's a little bit bigger and something that really tells a good story. I want to spend a little bit of money on, you know, things like special effects, smoke machines, things like that. I feel if I have a little bit of a bigger budget and a little bit more freedom to do something creative, I can take someone's brand and position it in a way that no one's ever seen it before and put them in their own league, despite them having competitors. Because, you know, a lot of brands, they do that. They make their own categories. Old Spice has done that with, you know, not, they used to compete with all the other brands, but Old Spice has made their own category by changing up their mentality with how they speak to people, with their humor.
Right.
So that, I would like the same opportunity.
Right. First of all, we'll start with the podcast. Yeah, it's a good goal to have. And that's still not like a crazy goal in the sense of 1,000 listeners. If you can get the 1,000 in the sense of you did it in less than 5 years, that's still an accomplishment. And as far as the branching out with the bigger budget, I think that's important. If you can get those creative tools, smoke machines, effects, or like you said you'll have to search the App Store. Even if you find an app that you can still use in the video production that may seem okay, well, it's free or something, or it might be just a little bit of payment to, you know, pay to use, and you can apply it to the other person's brand, they'll feel the difference too in 5 years. So it's important to keep your open mindset when you do get that budget, for sure.
Yes, you should always be pushing yourself to excel your skill. Always try to do better.
Always. And that's the key is if you can always do better from the last one, you'll make sure you improve and you'll get there further rather than slow down. We talked about practice. Just keep practicing, for sure.
Absolutely.
And our last question is, what is one thing I tell the Anchor Nation they may not know about you, and it could be a fun fact?
Well, it's that, I guess, I am... that's a good question. That's a tough one. Yeah. So something that they know about me, well, I guess it's that I'm all over the place. I may seem organized, or I may seem like I know what I'm talking about when I'm talking, but my mind is racing 1,000, you know, thoughts a minute. And you guys only, I mean, if anyone's listening to this, actually listens to my podcast, you only hear what I allow to go out. If I were to really publish all the things I delete, all the takes that I don't actually publish, you guys would see me in a very different light. Not in even a negative light. You guys would just see, like, wow, his brain goes to places that, like, just bizarre thoughts and connections I make. And that's just how I think. So I think that as time goes on and I start becoming a little bit more comfortable just speaking in the microphone and just building my brand, people will start seeing a different side of me that's not so regimented, professional, and always trying to sell the same spiel of, like, marketing is storytelling, and marketing doesn't have to be hard selling, but they'll just see more of who Lauren is as a person.
Interesting. And I think that's a good fun fact to end in a sense that you want to show your interesting side of the values rather than, you know, making it more of just that, outlandish fun fact. So that's a good, humble fun fact to end the interview on. I appreciate that.
Cool. Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you for this.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you to the Anchor Nation, as always, for giving your undivided attention. But before we go, Lauren, do you want to just DM your social media so people can find you on the web?
Sure. You can find me on social media at LBRAINSTEIN. It's L Brainstein on social media, on Twitter and Instagram.
Awesome. Or
you can check out my website at spacetree.ca.
And that's L Brainstein, too, for the podcast, too?
Yeah, L Brainstein.
Okay.
The Lauren Bronstein Experience.
Perfect. Lauren Bronstein Experience. You guys can find him there. Thank you, as always, to the Anchor Nation for not only giving your undivided attention to me, but the interviewee. And Lauren, my friend, it's been a pleasure. Thank you again.
Thank you. See you later.
Hi, Anchor Nation. This is Kevin Touch of Anchor Nation Community Radio, and I'd like to say thank you for listening to the Anchor Nation podcast. If you'd like to book an interview or DM me on Instagram, follow me at The Anchor Nation. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, it is also under The Anchor Nation. Thank you for listening and enjoy.